Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Always pretty, no matter what
color you are. Thank you, Jim.
You want
so
to be pretty?
I just
she wanted a recent raise, so she's got to say nice things to me.
Oh, give her the raise. Come on.
And Dr. Mixon, have you been working out? Every day, dear.
What, Lynette, what do I do with my hands? I'm struggling. Do I leave them here? Do I put them down? I see Jerry's calm, and I'm like...
Put them back. When in doubt, just cross them in front of you. Like that.
Here?
Yeah, or you can be the thinker.
Okay.
There you go. Yes.
All right,
Jerry,
I like that.
Oh, welcome back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette with Dr. Samira Umat and Dr. Jerry Mixon. Of course, we are still doing the video thing as we are on the radio as well, still practicing up with all of our wonderful new equipment. So we're talking, what do you do with the hands? Yeah. So you don't see those yet, but on the radio. All right. Back with the doctors talking with Eric about those long sneezing spells. What causes that?
Well, I mean, I know what generally causes sneezing, but what's causing him to sneeze 30 times?
Yeah, that's a big spell.
You know, two or three times?
Yeah.
Okay, most of us get those little sneezing fits from time to time.
Yeah.
You know,
some allergens.
Yeah, or we trigger that mucus or the irritant or whatever is up in our nose or sinus region that irritates us.
Get it up.
30? My goodness, Eric, I don't know. I think this falls under the stump the doctors category.
Yes.
Once a month, too. Again, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what they tell me, too. It seems to work, though. We've been remodeling a house at my mother's house, Montana, to sell it. And so in the last week and a half, we've been, like, putting the candle both ends. And so I come back here just very extraordinarily tired. And all of a sudden, I feel like I need to sneeze instead of sneezing one time. I'll do it like, I'm not kidding, about 30 times. I mean, it's just going to be rummy. And I feel great, and I feel great for another month.
Okay.
Wow. Well, the body clears all the mucus and the allergens and the gunk.
Or here's an idea now for you, Eric. Okay. You may as well monetize this. So you're going to write a book. Sneeze for good health.
Sneeze it out.
That's right. Sneeze it out. Or you're going to have to pay Lynette some royalties for that one.
Yeah.
And but you know, you get yourself a new cult following,
and just sneeze it out.
Become the guru of sneezes.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I'll work on that. I'll keep you guys in the loop.
All right. There we
go. Sounds good, Eric.
Right, take care. Bye-bye.
I sneeze in sevens, Eric, so you don't have to feel too bad. Whenever I start, I know, I do it in sevens. My mom was in fives.
Hear sevens. Do we hear 11s?
Yeah,
Come on, 7-11.
All right. Thank you, Eric, for the call. We are going to head now over to Buckley. We have Mary on the line. Good morning, Mary. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Mary. How can we help you, ma'am?
Where is Buckley?
Near Enumclaw.
Okay, near Enumclaw.
Okay, all right.
Out in the Tulies. Anyway, so a friend gave me a book from Dr. Gary Donovitz, and it's about hormone therapy with pellets.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
yeah.
Can you tell me anything about that?
Well, I'm well familiar with Dr. Donovitz. He is a professor of gynecology and obstetrics at Mayberry University in Atlanta.
How do you remember these things?
Wow.
I know the name, and that's all I know.
Dr. Mixon takes his optimal memory.
Well, and his daughter.
And then Rep came by and dropped the book off for me, but I don't know any of those details, Jerry. How do you remember these things?
Well, I read his research papers.
Okay.
And then I look at the people who wrote the papers, and then I Google them to find out where these researchers are and how much credence I should give to their work.
Right. Good for you.
Very good.
So that kind of pounds it into my head. Yeah, and Dr. Donovitz actually, and I understand he no longer owns it, but he owned...
At one time he did.
...the largest pellet manufacturer in America. Okay, so the company that sold pellets, he started the company and owned controlling interest in the company. So as you might expect, his book... pushes pellets.
Okay.
I'm not crazy about pellets as therapy. He's right in that testosterone pellets for women, that is testosterone for women, is strongly beneficial. I don't like using pellets as the way to get it in them.
Yeah.
I think that a transdermal cream gives us a lot more flexibility, but the basic underlying concept that a young woman, actually, estrogen is not her primary hormone. That's a mistake most people, in fact, most doctors make. Mm. A young woman has 2.5 to 3 times more testosterone in her bloodstream than she has estrogen. So testosterone is the primary sex hormone for men and women. The difference is that we men are far more hormonal than you women.
Could you say that again, Dr. Mixon?
Yes, we men are far more hormonal than women. We recognize women's hormone cycle because they menstruate. And so we see that sudden drop in progesterone each month. And 5 to 7 days after her progesterone drops out, she menstruates. So we see that happen on a monthly basis from about 13 to about 45 or 50. And so we say, aha, we see this hormone cycle in women. But the primary sex hormone is not estrogen or progesterone. It's testosterone in men and women. The difference is men, an 18-year-old boy is going to run a total testosterone between 1,000 and 1,200 nanograms per deciliter. That's a lot of testosterone. The average 15 to 17-year-old girl, because you guys peak your hormone levels a little earlier than we do, peaks her testosterone at about 70 to 80 nanograms. So we're well over 1,000. You guys are less than 100, all right? Mm-hmm. But your estrogen is about 1/3 of your testosterone. Now, your estrogen runs about 25 to 35 nanograms per deciliter. A man's estrogen only runs around 3 to 4 nanograms per deciliter. So we have way more testosterone, way less estrogen. You have more testosterone than estrogen, but more estrogen than we do by a factor of about 10. And so you are estrogen dominant for much of your lives. But it's fascinating that as testosterone and estrogen and progesterone all decline with age, breast cancer risk rises. And that's where Donovitz's research is focused. He actually does the research with his daughter, who's a nurse practitioner down in Texas.
Right.
She runs a hormone clinic in Texas. And so he uses her patients in Texas to do his research out of Georgia.
Oh.
All right. But what they found is that by giving women back their testosterone, there's a dramatic decline in the risk of breast cancer. Mm-hmm. His studies show that you give women back their testosterone, you cut their risk of breast cancer about 85%. Which is really dramatic.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we also know that estrogen replacement in postmenopause reduces risk for breast cancer by 30%.
About 30%. Yeah. That's right. So estrogen will reduce it 30%. testosterone will reduce it by about 85%.
Yeah.
And so estrogen and testosterone together are probably going to be close to our ideal combination.
Yeah.
Now, mm-hmm. then the question comes in is, what about the progesterone?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember when you got your PMSing? Some women PMS a lot worse than others. Okay. That was when you lost your progesterone.
Right.
Okay. Progesterone dropped. It peaks a week or so before your period. And that's just in case you get pregnant. The progesterone will help maintain the pregnancy. When your body realizes you're not pregnant, the progesterone drops like a stone. And that's when you get the mood swings. Well, guess what? Menopause, your progesterone is down about 70 to 75%. So a lot of the mood swings and the mood changes, the dysfunction of menopausal women's brain function is due to that low progesterone. They don't tolerate stress. They don't tolerate anxiety. They get upset more easily. They get stressed out by things that in their youth would not have bothered them. And that's progesterone loss. They also don't sleep well. Progesterone helps you sleep better. So if you really want women in midlife to do well, you need to raise their testosterone and raise their estrogen and raise their progesterone to more youthful levels. Now, the trick is with women, I want to raise it enough that they sleep better, they're not stressed, they tolerate anxiety well, they lower their risk of breast cancer dramatically. But most women don't want to restart their periods.
Mm-hmm. No.
And if I really recreate your 25-year-old hormone levels,
right,
you will start having periods again.
Mm.
And if I start your period again, you're going to say unkind things about my ancestry. Okay. And actually, my parents were married, so I'm not, you know. Anyway. Moving those hormone balancing in a coherent and systematic manner can give us really, really great results. Okay. You get stronger. You shift your metabolism away from fat towards muscle. It makes it easier for you to lose fat and get stronger, have less fatigue. You sleep better at night. You don't get stressed out with, mm-hmm. with the normal social stressors. It can really turn a woman's life around.
Absolutely.
But it takes more than just one hormone.
Right, right. So, and the other thing is the pellets, Jerry, once they're in, they're in.
Yeah.
If they get it right, they get it right. If they get it wrong, there's not much they can do about it. And
you just have to live with it for 3 to 4 months.
Right. And invariably, they are using higher doses of testosterone for women.
Yes.
And they do get some side effects, either skin side effects or body hair, facial hair.
Yeah.
And those do bother them.
Just FYI, I'm 70 years old, and I've been on bioidentical hormones for years.
Uh-huh.
And it's the cream. And I put it where I should put it. And but when I heard about somebody gave me this book and I read it, I thought, oh, maybe this would be easier. I wouldn't have to do that stuff every day.
Yeah.
And it sounded like the cost was pretty much the same when you got right down to it. But I needed some other opinions who know about this stuff other than just reading a book.
Right. There's definitely a convenience factor. There's no doubt about it.
But it does involve a little incision.
It does involve a surgical, like a mini process where they put them under your skin.
You have to make a little incision, push them under the skin with a trocar.
Yeah.
And you have to do it about every 3 months.
That's right.
And so the question is, you know, we can't adjust your dose day to day like we can with the creams.
Right.
And so I generally prefer the creams, but there are people who want the pellets. And, that's fine.
Yeah, and I actually find that younger people are more inclined to want pellets because they don't want to mess with the creams. Mm-hmm. As my patients get older, they actually prefer the creams. And, you know, I'll tell you why. I learned this from Jerry, actually. You can adjust the dose on a daily basis depending upon what you're doing.
Yep.
So if you're spending time with the grandkids on Saturday and Sunday, you just go a little light. and it allows you to function better. You're a little bit more mellow. And then when you're, you know, busy with work week and work schedules and other things that you're dealing with, you can just go a little heavier. So I now actually...
You've started following my pattern.
Well, and I teach my patients.
Yeah.
And so as they've been with me over time, I teach them how to do this for themselves, and I give them flexibility. And that way they're not at the constant dose 24/7.
Yep.
They vary it up, which is what normally physiology is too. Your body produces different amounts.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm so used to using the cream because, like I say, I've used it for years. But, you know, if something makes life a little bit easier at this point, I was going to try it. But I will think about it now.
Okay, well, we can do that for you if that's what you choose.
Yeah.
You do the pellet?
Not yet, but we want to. Yeah.
Yeah, she wants to go ahead and order them in and do some for people.
Yeah, I do.
So you can be her pellet guinea pig.
I think I'll think about this. Thank you.
There you go.
I don't blame you.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, bye-bye. Take care.
Thank you for the question, Mary. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be back with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat and your calls in just a moment. If you'd like to get through and into the call queue, here's the number. It's 1-800-465-8770. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Oh, yeah. And welcome back. We're Leading Edge Medicine. My name is Lynette here, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. And taking your questions, we are now headed to beautiful Golden Gardens, which will look gorgeous today in Seattle. Robert is on the line. Hi there, Robert.
Good morning, Robert.
Hello. Morning. I have a question. My knee pain. So I've been doing PRP, some injections, and my health provider basically gives them for me, free to me twice a year. Okay. They work good for about 3 months.
Yep.
So normally I can walk 5 miles with no aid, but once the PRP wears off, I can only go about 2 miles, and then I'm in quite a bit of pain. I like this PRP. It works for a while, works well for a while. The only problem is I can't take any anti-inflammatories 10 days before the injections.
Yep.
And coincident with that, I got on the internet and got a hold of Dr. Boss, and I decided, well, maybe I should be eating sardines for 2 weeks and go on a carnivore diet and the MCT oil coconut route, try to go ketotonic. I read that increases autophagy and is generally good for you, but I also read that meat increases inflammation.
Yep.
So if I'm on a ketotonic diet, eating a lot of meat and protein, am I hurting myself, increasing inflammation?
Depends on which meat and protein you choose. Red meats tend to increase inflammation. Okay, so, beef is probably your biggest no-no. You can do a carnivore diet. Obviously, the sardines, the oily fish, give you lots of omega-3s, which are anti-inflammatory. So that part is good.
Now, coconut oil, he said, but coconut oil is saturated fat.
Yeah, but it's the medium-chain triglycerides is what he's after.
Right.
And the medium-chain triglycerides, you've kind of got to mix. The saturated fat raises your cholesterol, but the medium-chain triglycerides, actually, your brain can burn those instead of sugar. So that one is a mixed bag.
Yes.
If you're going to use meat for your protein, then chicken. White meats are better than red meats.
Yeah.
Fish is better than any terrestrial creature.
I do have a question about the meats, though, Jerry. And I've had patients ask me this. Well, actually, they tell me that when they go hunting and they buy organic, and then that is not the same as what we buy on the store shelves.
It's a lot less fat. Yeah. Again, the high fat in the very, very tender store meats they want it to be fat because the fat makes it tasty and tender.
Right.
Okay. The game meats are very, very lean. They're much tougher. You got to cook them differently. But then, they don't have as many omega-6 fats.
So, but then, so that means if they don't have as much omega-6, they are less they're less inflammatory.
They're less pro-inflammatory. That's right.
Okay. Yeah. So they are right.
Yeah. So it's, but it's the fat by those, you know, very pampered animals that they keep them really fat and happy to the day they kill them.
Yeah. All right. You know. Okay. Yeah. Bred for a different purpose.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I have just another quick question, if you could.
Sure.
So I understand the answer that you just gave me was do white meats, stay away from pot roast, which I love. So I'll just do chicken and fish.
Okay.
The second question I have is, I have a very good cardiologist, like him a lot.
Good.
And he has got me on red yeast rice, which is probably a good thing because my cholesterol's a little... However, I'm finding that the more red yeast rice that I take, if I take like 4 pills a day, which is 2,400 mg, I really think it's giving me muscle weakness. Are you familiar with that? Could that be possible?
Of course. Sure.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Remember, lovastatin, the original prescription drug.
Lipitor.
Was actually copied from red yeast rice.
Right.
Red yeast rice has a low concentration of lovastatin. And what the pharmaceutical companies did was they took the chemical that was naturally occurring in the red yeast rice and they concentrated it, gave you a much higher dose, and made it a prescription drug.
Mm-hmm.
When you take that much red yeast rice, you're giving yourself basically a low dose of Lipitor. So you're getting the Lipitor side effects from your red yeast rice.
Yeah. But you counteract that by using high doses of CoQ10. And usually we start the patients on CoQ10 before we put them on red yeast rice. So that's one thing you could do if you're not doing it already. And then the second thing is add a little bit of citrus bergamot to your red yeast rice. That might allow you to use a little lower dose of red yeast rice.
Bergamot?
Yeah, citrus bergamot.
Okay. What dose would you suggest for the CoQ10?
CoQ10 is high doses, so, you know, depending, if you're using 2,400 milligrams of red yeast rice, I'd say even 300-400 milligrams of CoQ10 daily, easily.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
Okay, and
okay, well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay. Yeah, appreciate the answer to questions.
Okay.
You're welcome. Yeah, it works sometimes, but I always start ahead. I give them the CoQ10
first
way
and
ahead.
Load them. Well, yeah, and most older people have low CoQ10 to start with.
Right.
So you really need to load them with a CoQ10 before you hit them with something that's going to lower it further.
Right. Exactly. So. Yeah. And then the other thing is, you know, the muscle aches and pains, the foggy thinking and all. You have to be careful about those.
Yes.
If you tell your patients, then they watch out for it and then they take some steps to prevent that from happening.
Yeah. I am very sensitive to the red yeast rice.
Uh-huh.
You know, when I went on the rapamycin, my cholesterol went up some.
Yeah.
And I decided to lower it with the red yeast rice. But even at 2 capsules a day, I get muscle aches and fatigue.
Yeah, and also tendonitis. People tend to are more prone to injury.
So, you know, I can't tolerate more than 1 pill a day.
Mm-hmm. Which is just 500 milligrams.
Which is 500 milligrams. Yeah. And so I'm just way too sensitive to it for that.
Yeah.
So. Too bad.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We're going to take another phone call from Redmond. This time we have Hilmar on the line. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question regarding blood sugars. And what brought me to this was a prior conversation regarding rapamycin and how rapamycin can temporarily increase your blood sugars as well as triglycerides, et cetera. I talked to you 2 weeks ago about
and
that.
And cholesterol,
And cholesterol. So, historically, I've always had an issue about butting up against pre-diabetes, 5.5, 5.6 on the A1C. And for years and years, I've been trying to figure out, you know, how to get that down. Same thing with the fasting glucose, always butting up against close to 100. Now, the you say the usually you have when you get blood sugars that that are up against on those levels, you say that usually there are some symptoms that go along with that. Sometimes people will have higher triglycerides. You have some other symptoms besides just a number that go along with that, and maybe higher in inflammation levels, et cetera. If you have the higher the blood sugar, the higher the inflammation levels are. Well, in my case, and for years and years, my inflammation levels, like the C-reactive protein, somewhere around below 0.5, triglycerides down in the 50s. Cholesterol down maybe 120, 130. I mean, it's been consistent.
And it's always great.
It doesn't really seem... Yeah, so in terms of those symptoms, it's great. My body fat is low. I'm lean. I work out every day, just about every day, six days a week at least. I do aerobic exercise. I do resistance exercise because... because muscle, you build muscle, you burn more sugar, et cetera. I'm trying to address that issue with my blood sugars. Now, it doesn't. So what I did for a few years, I quit eating bread because bread, accordingly, quote unquote, is will cause your blood sugars to go up as a carbohydrate. I don't eat, and I never ate like Wonder Bread. I mean, I always eat like really heavy with seeds and stuff. It's a very heavy bread.
Sure. Some more fiber.
I did that for years in an attempt, more fiber and more roughage. So then all of a sudden, about a year ago, I had my gallbladder taken out, and I sort of said, well, I got to eat something. So I went and got some what you call Dakota bread. You can buy it from the local bakery here in this area, and because I need to eat something after my surgery. And so I think, okay, I'm going to stay on the Dakota bread or the bread and for a few months, and I'm going to take another blood test and see, nothing changed. It doesn't seem to matter.
Good.
What I eat, it stays the same. I'm always up against, like I said, the pre-diabetic, close to it. But I don't have any quote unquote symptoms. So I talked to some relatives of mine. I haven't talked to for decades over in Norway. And we got into to the blood sugar issues, and they informed me that their kids, who are very active athletes type, they're also having this issue about even as active as they are, as health conscious as they are, they're also butting up against this blood sugar issue. So I'm thinking, well, maybe there's hereditary genetic factor going into this.
Most likely.
But, yeah, so, I've been battling this animal for a long time. I'm trying to desperately get those numbers down on the blood sugar, but I don't have those symptoms. And what got me into this was you and I talked about the rapamycin and how it. Mm-hmm. So I figure, is there any reasonable expert? Nobody's been able to answer why am I otherwise got all those good numbers. I have no signs of having elevated blood sugar, so to speak, but I can't get them down.
But you shouldn't.
What? It's like...
Yeah, but you're trying to meet an artificial construct. We have to take a little break, but we'll come right back. Don't go anywhere, and we'll chat a little bit about normal human variation when we return, okay?
All right.
Okay, great.
Stay right there, Hilmer. Leading Edge Medicine will continue in just a moment, and we'll be back with your questions. Phone lines are open for you. 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. We'll be right back.
It's a good question.
And we're back. with more Leading Edge Medicine and your phone calls. The phone lines are open for you if you want to call with your questions. 1-800-465-8770. And we're going to talk with Hilmer now. You had that last question, Hilmer.
Hilmer, I think you're falling prey to the concept of trying to be ideal according to our statistical constructs. The numbers that we are talking about are where most people do best.
Yes.
And so those are the numbers we put out. And so most people, as they bump up closer to 5, 6, 5, 7, we call them pre-diabetic, because statistically, people in that range have a much higher risk of becoming diabetic.
Right.
It doesn't mean you would. In fact, it sounds to me like you're doing absolutely everything you reasonably can to never be diabetic.
Right.
Yeah, so, and it clearly sounds like even your young relatives that are very athletic and lean and fit have similar sorts of blood levels that you do.
Yes.
One of the things I try to point out to folks is the good Lord designed us as human beings to the same general plan.
Yeah.
You know, two eyes, one nose, one mouth, one heart, two lungs, etc. But within that general plan, there's a lot of individual variation.
Mm.
And there are simply genetic and family traits. And you run a little higher average blood sugar than most people.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, we see absolutely no evidence that you're headed towards diabetes.
Right. Hilmer, did you ever consider getting a continuous glucose monitor?
No. A friend of mine at the gym said, you know, he suggested one time, and I go, well, okay, I kind of brushed by it, but that's probably a good idea, maybe.
Yeah, really.
The other thing I'm wondering about is associated with the damage to the red blood cells that's associated with increased blood sugars is the, what you call the, if I'm not mistaken, it's called the AGEs, which is the advanced glycation end products.
And,
is that correct?
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. AGEs. So what I do, because I see those numbers and because I'm hysterical about this, is I take benfotiamine, which I'm familiar with benfotiamine. It's a B vitamin, right?
And there's
a fat-soluble version of it.
Yeah.
And then there's the water-soluble. Because there are nutrients that you can take to eliminate the AGEs, because the AGEs are, particularly like in red meat, it's astonishing how much, for instance, the AGEs from a raw meat, if you cook it or if you barbecue it, the amount of AGEs goes up exponentially, depending on how you prepare the food. So I'm just taking the precaution that because I see those numbers, I take so much stuff I can't even keep track of it. But benfotiamine is the one that I take because this particular formula I'm taking has both the fat-soluble, it's actually called mega benfotiamine, and so it's got the fat-soluble and the water-soluble version of it. So I figure that's what I'm trying to do to prevent any kind of, you know, damage to the red blood cells. Am I making sense? Or
yeah, you're making sense, and you know I understand the theory. In your situation, I have doubts. My guess is you're probably overshooting a bit. You know, you use the word hysterical. And I think you are. You're clearly a very, very healthy guy, very health conscious. You're doing everything you know how to do.
Mm.
You're doing more than the vast majority of physicians in the country know how to do. So congratulations.
Yeah.
You're clearly well self-educated. But I think the biggest advice I can give you is chill, dude. Relax a little bit and enjoy your life.
Well, you know what, Dr. Mason, I'm going to blame you for part of my hysteria because you've been pounding on this. Get that A1C down. Get down to 5.
You're listening. Good job.
Attacks, you know?
Yeah, but you see, I'm talking to the general radio audience that is 30 to 40 pounds overweight and sedentary.
Yeah.
You know,
that's not me.
No, that's not you. And so, you know, you just need to kind of you join Dr. Mixon's Good Guy Club. Relax and enjoy your life, my friend, because you're doing wonderfully. I don't see any reason for hysteria.
I get off the anti-anxiety drugs now. Okay, good.
Please do. Yes. No. You just need more warm cuddles from a beautiful woman and you just chill out a bit, okay?
Well, that sounds like a good formula to me. Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Okay, take care, my friend.
Hilmer, thank you so much for the call.
That's
too funny. But, it's good. Don't you wish, Dr. Mixon, that everyone was as concerned about their blood sugar?
If everybody were like Hilmer, America's medical costs would be a tiny fraction of what they are now.
Yes.
You know, we would be a much happier, healthier, fitter, more relaxed. Well, maybe slightly
not
more
relaxed.
Hysterical.
More hysterical.
They ought to be able to relax. No.
Well, the anti-anxiety drugs would be good.
That's true. No, I think Hilmer's doing great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds like it.
That's my only advice to him. You're doing fine. Relax. Enjoy it. Yeah, the thing I try to get across to folks is that Longevity Medical Clinic.
Yeah.
Our job, our goal is to make you as strong, fast, lean, smart, sexy, and happy as we possibly can.
Right.
We aren't trying to make you paranoid. We aren't trying to make your life so miserable you pray for an early death. Mm. We want you to have the happiest life you possibly can.
Sure. Mm. And sounds like he does. You know, he works out. He watches what he eats. He watches the numbers. He's knows about the supplements, knows what to take, knows what to avoid.
He's a little obsessive. But that's, other than that, he's doing great.
Yeah.
So he just needs, like I said,
A
chill pill. And my favorite chill pill is a beautiful woman to give me cuddles and poor babies.
There you go.
Okay, Jerry.
But you know what? It is very important to know about our A1C, and I don't think that's something many people are familiar with until they actually get that note from the doctor. Oh, by the way, you're pre-diabetic, or
even worse, you're 6.6 and you are diabetic.
You're like, wait, how did I, you know, how did I not know?
Yeah, and that's very true, Lynette. Mm-hmm. One of my patients actually said that to me. He had been with this primary care provider for 30 years, and then he said one day, he just told me I'm diabetic. He said, I've been seeing him for 30 years. I wish he had given me a warning.
Yes, I see your numbers going up. And that was the same with me, with my primary. And it going up, and it's like, we don't want that. No, don't surprise me by that piece of information.
But the problem is that most of the medical world waits until you have a disease, and then they can treat it.
Right. Mm.
And you have the disease when your laboratory or your symptom complex meets a certain predefined level that some committee has decided about.
Ah.
You know? So at 6.4, you're not a diabetic. At 6.5, you are.
Right.
Like, your body doesn't know the difference in 6.4, 6.5.
Yeah.
You know, all that happens when you're 6.0, 6.1, 6.2, 6.3, 6.4... you are doing the damage more slowly than you will do when you're 6.6, 6.7, 6.8, and 6.9.
Right.
But, you know, the damage is being done, and we want to catch it in the earliest stages possible and help you to avoid ever getting the diagnosis.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And knowing your A1C is so important. So that's why Longevity is here. We still offer our free health analysis appointment, which gets you in the door to meet our wonderful staff. We have three locations, Tacoma, Linwood, and in Kirkland. And just two simple tests, right? Dr. Umat, you can go through this two tests that we do. And we get some history on you, too, so that we know what, as Dr. Mixon said, life has done to you so far.
That's right. The hemoglobin A1C, as we've been talking about, is the glycosylated hemoglobin, which is the damaged cells from sugar. And that's why Hilmar was so concerned about it, because when you reach that certain point, which is 5.7, you now have prediabetes. At 5.6, you're actually normal. And at 6.5, you have type 2 diabetes, but 6.4 is normal. But it's a continuum. And we pick up where you are in that continuum, and that risk increases as you get higher. And that's what we want to let you know, that your risk is increasing and therefore you are damaging A, B, C, D. And that's basically everything, you know, your blood vessels, your eyes, your hair, your skin, your kidneys, your lungs, everything is being affected by it. It's not just that you have diabetes. Diabetes is a very dangerous condition. And it increases risk for amputations and, frankly, premature death from all causes, including heart disease and cancers. So you want to avoid that as much as possible. The sooner you know, the more you can do to prevent it and be proactive about it. The second test actually is the in-body, where you stand on a machine and it looks at muscle mass to fat to water ratios. And it looks at muscle in your arms, your core, your legs, and basically tells you whether you're normal or below normal. And so we have some patients that look great, their weight is completely normal, but they have very little muscle mass and very high body fat mass. And those people we call our skinny fat. And they are not making enough brain-derived neurotropic factors to help them beat disease, arthritis, like inflammation, like cancers. So remember, muscle is the currency of aging, and we want to see you build healthy muscle, which decreases as we get older. If you build more muscle, you maintain structural integrity, and the house is strong. So let's keep your house strong.
Yes, I like that. Let's get you in for a free health analysis appointment to longevity. Make your appointment. You can do that one of two ways, by giving us a call, 866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG, or by going to our website, which is lmclinic.com. That's lmclinic.com. Get into one of our longevity clinics and get started and get your health where you want it to be. You're going to feel better in 6 months, a year from now. And Dr. Mixon, what do we like to say? You're going to feel what?
Stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, sexier, and happier.
Absolutely.
Which is the goal for life. I want you as happy as possible.
Absolutely. Right. Give us a call at 866-86-YOUNG, or you can go online to make that appointment, lmclinic.com. All right? Taking a break, and we'll be back with Julie's question next on Leading Edge Medicine. More Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Samira Umat and Dr. Jerry Mixon. I'm Lynette, and we will get to the phones and take some more phone calls here. All right, we have Julie on the next line. Julie is calling from Graham. Welcome, Julie.
Hello, Julie.
Thank you. Hi. I have a question for you. It's a little complicated. 87-year-old mother. She has chronic bladder infections. They are always 99% E. coli. Taking her to an infectious specialist doctor because medications by pills devastate her digestive system. Mm. So they are giving her IVs of Rocephin when she does get another infection. Which the last 4 months, 5 months, it has been every 4 weeks.
Wow.
And it is IV, 1,000 milligrams of Rocephin for 7 days at the infusion center. How in heaven's name can she get rid of it?
Well, the question is, of course, is she getting reinfected, or is just never really clearing?
Yeah.
My guess is she's getting reinfected. E. coli
probably from hysterectomy years ago. Yeah. And naturally, the female organs are probably dropping down.
Yep.
She did have she did have a lift, so that includes the probably some leakage from the bowel.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think I've got this figured out, but I'm not too sure how to keep her from getting this high amounts of antibiotics every.
Well, let's start by see if we can keep her from getting the infection.
Right.
And there's a couple of there's a couple of things we can try. All right. Obviously, I have not examined her, so I don't know her anatomy. I can tell you what the normal or the usual anatomy would be in a woman of her age, especially who's had a hysterectomy and has some descent of the vaginal walls and so on. This is almost always a contamination from the rectum. You know, everything is kind of fallen down. It is moist. You got you got mucus. You probably got some urinary leakage. You know, probably a little bit of urine leaking down, so that perineum always stays wet. And then you got the bacteria from the bowel coming forward in that wet environment to that very short female urethra. So I would start it this way. Okay. I go to the store, get myself a Providine iodine, which is usually comes in a little plastic squeeze bottle, about, I don't know, a pint or so at a time. It's dirt cheap, $8 or $10 for a pint. And I would mix that one part iodine to about 3 or 4 parts clean water and use that to basically wash her perineum, wash from the vagina all the way back to the rectum. And I would do that a couple of times a day. The iodine will kill just about everything that moves down there.
On the surface,
kills all the bugs on the surface. And by washing it from front to back.
Right.
So you're washing it with this dilute iodine solution all the way back to her rectum.
Remember, that's important, front to back, not back to front.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so you're pushing everything back, but you're also killing a lot of these organisms. And especially when she has a bowel movement, then you want to make sure that you clean that rectum area very, very thoroughly, again, with the iodine solution. Okay? I do this a couple times a day. I do it first thing in the morning. I do it again if she has a bowel movement during the day. And I do it again before going to bed at night. And by washing and cleaning this area, you're trying to minimize the risk of the bacteria getting from the bowel into the bladder. And if you don't get the bacteria into the bladder, you don't get the infection.
Right. So also keep it dry.
Yep.
As much as possible. So if she has leakage, that'll be a problem.
Right.
And then what about, Jerry, keeping the acidic medium, the pH acidic, as much as possible?
A lot of vitamin C will help that.
But oral vitamin C?
Yeah, oral vitamin C, because it's cleared through the kidneys.
Yeah.
And so that extra ascorbic acid will be picked up by the kidneys and dumped out in the urine, which acidifies the urine.
Right.
And helps to minimize bacterial growth.
Right. Okay. And then what about D-mannose? I like D-mannose.
If she tolerates it, D-mannose is a basically it's a sugar that neither we nor the bacteria can metabolize.
Yeah, but it binds to the bacteria.
Right. The bacteria have these little cilia, little almost like thousands of little tiny legs that let them attach to the bladder wall. And the D-mannose basically gums those up. They can't attach. And so when you pee, they just slide the bacteria right out of the bladder. So those are several.
Have you tried D-mannose before?
Just beginning to start.
Yeah.
Because we have been at this since May.
Okay.
Yeah.
And now they want to put in a port because her veins in her arms are collapsing. So we can't do the IVs anymore.
Yeah, see, so even if we can decrease her infection rate by two-thirds, get her one-third as many infections as she's been having, that decreases the need for the antibiotic therapies.
Right, right.
Well,
and and then there is another antibiotic your doctors could write for that is less harmful. It is called methenamine hippurate. and it's used for urinary tract infections. You only want it for about 5-7 days. They can write for it. It's not as damaging, and it might help.
Could you spell that for me?
You're right. So M-E-T-H-E-N-A-M-I-N-E, methenamine. M-E-T-H, hippurate, H-I-P-P-U-R-A-T-E, methenamine, hippurate.
Okay. And is that oral or IV?
Oral. It's oral.
Oral. Okay. Mm-hmm. Anything will help, because this is, I begin to think that this process is killing her.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's see what we can do to decrease it.
Yeah. Mm. Is there anyone in your facility that can cover something like this, or do we have to stay with an infectious specialist?
Well, it sounds to me like infectious specialist is the way to go with her.
Okay.
So, again, our medical specialty is the aging process.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So we are often referred to as anti-aging doctors, although I can't make you an hour younger.
Why not?
How about a minute?
Right.
Maybe
right.
Next week he can work on that.
I mean, it's a revolving process right now.
Yes.
And we're going nowhere.
Well,
and the medicine
maybe
makes her as sick.
Yeah. Well,
let's just see if some of these little topical things might help.
Right.
Okay. Okay. And that last medication, would you say one more time?
Methenamine, hippurate.
Hippurate.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Oh, thank you so very much. It's better to ask than to walk around in the dark.
Absolutely. We're happy to help. That's why we're here.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very, very much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for
good
that.
Good luck, okay?
Yes. Thank you for that question, Julie. A couple of off-air questions I'll do quickly before we take off for the day. One of them is, how often to use Preparation H for under eye circles and puffiness?
This is a trick a lot of women have used.
Yes.
Since the 1950s, actually.
It's a Miss America trick.
Yeah. Those dark circles under your eyes are basically dilated blood vessels.
Yeah. Or puffy eyes.
And the vasoconstrictors that help the dilated veins in your hemorrhoids shrink down.
Yeah.
Also works in your under eye. So you just don't want to get it in the eye.
Right.
But you rub it on the skin under the eyes, and within a few minutes, you'll usually see those dark circles start to fade away. It's not a real therapeutic. You're not fixing anything. You're hiding it by making the vessels constrict. But they'll usually stay constricted for a few hours.
Okay.
And so, most women would use it if they're going out.
To a party.
If they're going, or if you're going to get your photograph taken, or that sort of thing.
Fair enough.
A little Preparation H under the eyes will
That'll do it.
Yeah, lighter and brighter.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for that. Okay. All right. Just less than a minute to go of our show today, and want to remind folks of the gallery test that is at all three of our clinics coming up 2 weeks from today, September 14th. That is the test for how many cancers? Over 50? Is that right?
Over 50.
Over 50 cancers. The gallery test. But you do need to make an appointment for this, and you can do that by calling our main office, 1-866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. You can also go on our website and make that appointment at lmclinic.com. Have a great rest of your Labor Day weekend, and we'll be back next week live. This is Leading Edge Medicine.